Trojan fans, it's time for another installment of the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We give you the inside scoop on everything about USC football recruiting from the experts who know what they're talking about. Which players have an offer, which ones don't, who the coaches like, and who our experts like. And now, here are your co-hosts for the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham and USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast Special Edition. This is our Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. It's been about a month or so, three, 4 weeks since we did one. Obviously, a lot going on around the USC program. We'll try to do more of these. I think I say that every time, but we will. We definitely will try. Gerard Martinez, obviously, foremost recruiting expert when it comes to USC Trojan football recruiting. He knows what's going on inside and out. Follow him on Twitter at GMartLive. It's always fun to talk some recruiting with Gerard. And I actually requested a few texts and voicemails, so we got some late questions in for Gerard. So we'll get him to answer all those. Welcome in Gerard right now. He's on the line. Gerard, how are you holding up right now?
I'm doing okay. definitely time of year, seeing how USC is playing, that the team is taking precedent. And obviously that's going to affect how USC recruits. And it's interesting because we are at a time of year where now recruiting becomes important. And the past 2 years, we were at that point where we always talked about USC's strategy and how they didn't recruit real hard over the summer. And during the season, they really sort of slow played the recruiting process. And we always said, you know, if they don't have a good season, this strategy could really backfire on them. And the past 2 years, obviously, they finished strong. And so they were able to also finish strong in the recruiting trail. This is the year where they haven't. This is the year where they've had a bad season. Clay Helton's on the hot seat now. I can officially say that he's on the hot seat now. And it's going to impact the recruiting process. And so going forward, yeah, USC may be scrambling a bit. And this is an interesting year because we've talked about this in the past podcast, and we've talked about it in the war room. This is a year where USC probably can oversign. They probably should oversign. And so you're not only looking at what can you get from a quality standpoint, but you're also looking what can you get at a quantity standpoint. You do have some spots to fill in order to make sure you're still at that 85. So it's interesting. This is going to be an interesting stretch as we get closer to the early signing period, which is also going to cause some issues in terms of when you're talking about instability and potentially hiring a new staff, and then signing day, which still comes in February. So very interesting times. Very, a lot of some dominoes have got to fall here before we can make some predictions. But I'm sure folks are still going to want me to make predictions, even though we are in this uncertain time right now between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, no, the predictions, everyone wants them. Everyone's assuming Clay Helton's going to be gone. I'm not assuming that. I think a lot depends on these last two games. I can't see a scenario. I mean, what we've understood is that the administration would rather not. The preference would be to not fire Clay Helton right now, to not change head coaches. So if he beats UCLA and he beats Notre Dame, I know everyone's saying that's impossible. That's not impossible. USC already beat Washington State. It's Notre Dame at home. Certainly they could win that game. They're as talented as Notre Dame. If the talent just plays up to its potential, that's a game you could win. Now, most likely USC doesn't win and loses by double digits again, but don't discount the fact that that could happen. And if it does, I don't think there's going to be a coaching change. So obviously that changes a whole lot. Does that change? Is that like a program changing sort of thing? No, but from what we understood, and you know, that's what the administration would like to do. They would rather not make a change right now. That's a perfect excuse not to. So I know people have all these foregone conclusions, but there's so many moving parts and pieces going into these rivalry games, Gerard. It's really hard to say what's going to happen until you see these games play out.
Yeah, they are rivalry games. And this is one thing that I stated after the ASU loss. We had a big thread going on the Peristyle, and we talked about it, and people want to know. And I think they miss construe what we report in terms of what we're hearing and what we've seen from USC from an administrative standpoint, and get that mixed up with necessarily what we want or what we think should happen. They're different things. And after the ASU loss, I told people, I think USC still has to lose another two games before you're going to see some real heat and some real talk at the top about Clay Helton's future. And it's because that stretch of games was full rivalry games. You have Cal, which is a team that is a rival both on the field and politically to USC. USC traditionally has been a very conservative school, and obviously Cal is not that. You have UCLA, crosstown rival that people don't want to lose to. Alums don't want to lose to UCLA. They don't want to hear about losing UCLA to their counterparts at work and in business. And then you have Notre Dame, which is a traditional rival that you don't want to lose to. And so those games combined with Oregon State just being a dumpster fire, and you don't want to go up there and lose to Oregon State, which is the worst team in the Pac-12, that allotment of games, you lose a couple games in there, and then, you know, somebody in the BOT gets out of bed and actually reads the newspaper and says, wow, the football team's really bad. Maybe we got to talk about that. But having said all that, we know for a fact that the administration wants to keep Helton there if they can. And we reported before Lynn Swann made his radio address, which was, I think it was 2 weeks ago at this point.
Yeah.
We had heard that the administration had gone to some boosters and some people at USC and said flat out, he's coming back next year, regardless of what happens this season. Okay, that was stated. Now, between that statement and Lynn Swann actually getting on the radio, there was a little bit of a difference. Lynn Swann never went so far to say that. And obviously, we can make some conjecture, and you kind of read between the lines, and you wonder, okay, is that because Lynn Swann's not completely on board with this? Did he sort of knowingly not say and give any guarantees he's coming back next year? All he did is say, you know, we support him and we feel that, you know, he can get the job done, which is definitely falling short of saying no matter what happens this season, Clay Helton will be the coach in 2019. So that's something interesting. But again, it still reiterates what we've seen the administration display over the past couple years, just the whole process of hiring Clay Helton and promoting him to head coach. All of these things, they kind of paint a picture for us. And we just report what that picture looks like to everybody because we're looking at it. We're seeing it develop over the past couple years and obviously more over the past couple months because USC is losing and we know there's going to be more pressure. And there's pressure obviously from boosters. But boosters are, you know, there's boosters on the peristyle. Lots of people are boosters. We're talking about the people that are really giving a lot of money and the opinion makers and the influencers at USC. And I think when you start losing these rivalry games, and obviously you kind of look at it with that Notre Dame game as kind of icing on the cake, because that Notre Dame game could get ugly. I mean, Notre Dame could come into USC and could rout them like they did last year, but at home. And that leaves a real sour taste in everybody's mouth, especially if USC is barely just bowl eligible. It's not like, hey, you know, we're still going to the Rose Bowl, or hey, we might be going to the Alamo Bowl, but yeah, we had that really bad game against Notre Dame. Notre Dame's a really good team. You know, we've got a freshman quarterback, which we've heard all season. That's been a big excuse for, you know, the offense's woes. But we're good. We still got this bowl game we're going to play for. I mean, if you used to lose to UCLA, you don't even have a bowl game that you're going to, and then you've got that Notre Dame game, which is going to be pretty hard to win, and that could be, again, kind of how you end the season. The thing that makes it difficult with recruiting is you've got two things that have changed over the past few years, two things that have changed since USC has been looking for a new head coach. One, the early signing period, which is in mid-December. Now, kids don't have to sign early. If you're an early graduate, you don't actually have to sign during that small window. You can do whatever you want to do. You can just enroll still. But you do have that early signing period, and you know there's a lot of pressure on those kids, any kid, to sign early. schools are going to want to try to grab those signatures early, pressure those kids, get them off the table. And so you'll know Oregon, all of these schools will be pressuring and pushing these kids, try to get them off the board just in case something happens with USC. They know that, you know, USC is sort of that sleeping giant. They don't want to have something change with the coaching staff that all of a sudden, you know, these kids are starting to look at USC again. So you have that early signing period's an issue. But you also have the rule that's just changed this past year where schools can contact potential transfers. Kids can put their name in a database now with the NCAA, and they are able to be contacted by other schools as they transfer. So that whole, interfering, or there was a rule where you couldn't actually talk to kids that were still enrolled at a school, that's gone now. The kids can still be, you know, on the roster, but if they put their name into that database and say, you know, I'm opening for transfer, they can get called and they can get contacted by those other schools and set up visits. So that's something now that has changed the game a bit, because any indecisiveness, and you know that there's potential a kid could put his name in that database, and then he's going to be on the open market. So there's a lot of, like you said, moving parts. There's a lot of moving parts even for an incoming staff if USC decides to make a change. So that in itself is going to have a big impact on the recruiting process and ultimately the scholarship roster of 85.
All right. So there's a lot to break down with the questions we have. Before we jump into that, I wanted to talk. USC did have an official visitor on campus, who I happened to get to see because I was getting a tour of the Galen Center. Thanks. Shout out to Katie Ryan from, not the Galen Center, the John McKay Center. Katie Ryan, Sports Information. I had friends in town who wanted to see John McKay. Like, I obviously seen a bunch of times, but she was nice enough to give everybody a tour, and we happened to bump into a big man that was on an official visit. So I don't know if you want to break down what happened there or who was coming in and stuff, Gerard.
Well, you saw him. I would give us the breakdown of what you saw first and foremost, because you had eyes on the visit as it was going on.
Yeah. A very large man. What is he?
He's listed as 6'8", 360 pounds.
He looked like that.
he looks like that. That's basically Chantrell Henderson. And to kind of cue it off, I mean, first of all, we're talking about Indianapolis, Ben Davis, offensive tackle, DeJuan Jones, who really just got a scholarship offer from USC earlier in the week. And at that point, it didn't sound like USC was going to have any official visitors for the Cal game. And so that's all happened very quickly, where this was kind of a last minute deal where he decided to take that official visit. And so, 6'8", 360 pounds, offensive tackle, coming from Indianapolis, kind of a last-minute thing.
Yeah, so we were getting the tour, and I think that we got to the area that's sort of there was restricted areas, like you can't go into the locker room and stuff, and this was the players' lounge. And we happened to bump into our buddy Gavin Morris, and he said, hey, come on, take a look real quick. And so just, you could see the lounge, there's like a Papa Shot. It's, you know, it's nice in there for the players to kind of hang out. And then, but across the room, you see this very large man, and, you know, on an official visit, and he was there with his family, and Jones was shooting some free throws on the Papa Shot. I think Gavin went over and just was talking a little trash to him about a shot, but he looked very, hand-eye coordination, I would say, looked very good for a big man like that. He was shooting the ball pretty well. And we saw them later on, like, outside the John McKay Center, they were getting into a cart. At the time, USC was doing their walkthrough on Howard Jones Field. So they were going to get carted around. I think they went over to the practice field. And then we ended up going over to the bookstore and then came back right before the jock rally, which is at 5:00. And then, you know, Jones came back with the rest of the team, and the whole team was there and stuff. And everyone looked like they're having a good time. Obviously, this is the night before the Cal game, but we got eyes on him, and he's definitely as big as advertised, I'd say.
Yeah, and this is kind of segues, I guess. Perhaps we'll have questions about this, but kind of talking about the offensive line recruiting at the start, because it's a big deal for USC. This is a position that they need some bodies at. They only got two offensive linemen in the last class. They were looking for three. This is a class where we've talked about them signing 4 to 5, and seeing that they could oversign, they could really sign a full five, maybe even more, if they can get those quality bodies. And that's the whole thing is, you know, can they get the quality players, or are you just, you know, recruiting for bodies and just getting players and kind of doing what Lane Kiffin did in that 2011-2012 class, where he just stocked up on guys, and some of them ended up being scouting players for the most part. You know, they had some guys, there was JUCO guys they brought in that were never going to really contribute in games for USC, but there were scouting players, and there was a value to that. And that was kind of before the sanctions hit, just trying to get the numbers up. And so at this point, obviously USC doesn't have to worry about sanctions, but they do have to worry about trying to keep some Division I level guys on that 85-man roster. And so you've seen them scrambling a little bit. I think the offensive line right now is in plan B, plan C mode. I think they have missed out on some guys at this point, or they feel that they are slipping and behind with some guys. Jonah Ta'anau is one guy that's at Narbonne High School. He actually was at the Cal game, so he hasn't really been at USC a whole lot. I thought he would be there more, but I think with Drevno taking over and Neil Callaway being fired, they kind of wanted to reintroduce him, you know, to the offensive line and to Drevno, and so he was at the game. Fortunately, they lost that game. They had a really good showing of players at the game. They also had Tristan Miller, who's a, you know, 6'6", 300-pound offensive tackle from North Carolina, and he's a North Carolina State commit. He showed up on an unofficial visit. He was just recently offered. He was offered, I think, at the end of October. So that's kind of an interesting guy, a little bit of a plan B again, but, you know, a quality body. Kind of going all the way out to Charlotte, North Carolina, which hasn't been somewhere that USC's had much luck. But I think this is, again, sort of Tim Drevno taking over, and perhaps these are guys that, you know, he had some contact with when he was at Michigan. I could see, obviously, with DeJuan Jones, that could be a guy that, you know, popped up at a Michigan camp or something. Maybe, you know, Tim Drevno had his eye on him. Ron Carr is another player that they just recently offered from Solon, Ohio. He's 6'5", 240, obviously a project guy. He's was committed to Yale. He's backed off of that commitment, but a player that has been getting a lot more interest from schools recently. There's quite a few offers going out at the offensive line, I think, because USC needs bodies. That's just one of those things that they're scrambling a bit. But you also need some quality, and that's going to be the biggest question. Are they going to be able to still close on a guy like Sean Ryan? Inoke Vamahi is a guy that they're trying to close on that I think leaning more towards Utah now, where they had a lead for him. I think Utah's kind of taken the lead on him. There's a few guys like that that I think is pushing the offensive line to kind of scramble a bit and pivot on some plan Bs. And it was a really good year in the West Coast for offensive linemen. Certainly at the top of the board, a lot of quality offensive linemen. It's just one of those things where I think USC, with the season they've had, I think the fact that, you know, Callaway was a part-time recruiter. I mean, we can kind of say it now. I don't like to badmouth, you know, coaches or seemingly be too critical when they're on the staff, because, you know, they had closed strong in past years. But when you have a year like this, and you're not recruiting during the summer, and you're not doing those things that other coaching staffs are doing to be in constant communication and really try to build a relationship, and you're just kind of waiting for the end of November and December to kind of put on the press with the in-home visits, you're going to fall behind from other schools. And when you don't have a good season and people are criticizing you, and the offensive line has obviously not been consistent for USC the past 3 years, they've, you know, a couple years they had some good games, but then they turn around and have a bad game. And this year there's been a lot more bad than good. And so offensive linemen are looking at that, and they're looking at how well you're developing those players. And so, you know, when I think Clay Helton brought in Tim Drevno, it reminded me a lot of when Lane Kiffin had James Craig there, and then they brought in Mike Summers on top of that. And you had two offensive line coaches basically on a staff of, you know, nine, which you need those full-time assistant jobs to try to spread around as much as possible. You want as many positions to be coached as possible, and you got two offensive line coaches, that's no good. And in this case, they sort of augmented it because Clay Helton had Drevno coaching running backs, but that was immediately something that we questioned because Drevno had not really coached running backs since the beginning of his career. I think it was like at Idaho State or something. And so that was kind of silly. I mean, it was one of those things where you saw listen, you are obviously not sure about Callaway. And if you have any hesitation, you got to make that move. And he didn't make that move, and it cost him, obviously, this season.
Yeah, it's that completely reminded me of that. And you knew it was just bad decisions for sure. Like, that, you were kind of hesitant. You're trying to, like, hedge your bets a little bit. Just go with it. Like, you got to get rid of your second dad and move on. If you want to be Drevno to be the guy, be the guy. But you've wasted a year of that, and you went from an amazing running backs coach to an inexperienced running backs coach, and they've got too many inexperienced coaches on the staff already. Well, let's jump into these questions, Gerard, because they're not going to answer themselves. We got to do it. There's so many of them here. We got a text message. I know Clay Helton is still employed, but given the loud rumblings about coaching changes, what is USC's message to recruits, and who is delivering this message? And second, how is it being received? That's from Coliseum Fan, who sent in a lot of text questions, but this was the first one. It was good. I thought we'd answer that one.
I've spoken to a few recruits, and one message that is being put out there, I won't get into, you know, who's saying it necessarily, but the one message that's being put out there is that there will be changes. Now, that really comes with the implication that there will be changes, but Clay Helton won't necessarily be one of them. So it's, yes, Clay is coming back, but there are going to be changes in the staff. And implied in seeing, you know, what positions that those changes are coming, and seeing the recruits that are kind of replying that and relaying that, you know, I think there's going to be some changes at defensive back. I think that's one coaching position that I would think, seeing what I'm hearing, would be one that's definitely up for grabs. Obviously, a change has already been made at offensive line. Will Drevno take that position over full time? We assume that. So obviously, you've got to bring a running back coach in. The bigger question will be with the offense and the coordinator position. You've got T. Martin there now. T. Martin is still the offensive coordinator by title, but he's obviously not calling plays. How does that dynamic change? That's really kind of the bigger question, I think, with the team and the team's direction. With recruiting, maybe not so much, although obviously if T. Martin was let go, that would impact the receiver position. T. Martin's been a very good receivers coach, and he's been a very good recruiter, not just at the receiver position, but in recent years as he's taken over the offensive coordinator and has had that on his plate. He's become more, I think, focused in on just recruiting receivers. And the receiver position is obviously stacked this year, and you've got a ton of really good receivers that you could bring in the 2019 class. USC's got a very good group of committed receivers in the 2019 class with Puka Nacua. You've got Drake London, who's very underrated. You potentially got Brew McCoy out there. They're still recruiting Kyle Ford. I mean, you could have a really good receiving class. So if you let T. Martin go, that's one of those positions where, with the early signing period and everything else going on, you've got to be very decisive, and you've got to bring in somebody who can recruit and somebody that can be you know, very dynamic in that trail to be able to make sure you secure some of those good players in the 2019 class, and also, you know, have some carryover to the 2020 class. Now, the problem is, who are you bringing in, and is he going to be the offensive coordinator? How does that work if Clay Helton says that he still wants to call plays? And and this is one thing we said about Clay Helton, which is kind of surprising, because he had made the statement that he is intending on calling plays next year. He had said that when he took over the play calling duties just the other week, when T. Martin was sort of removed from that role. I intend on calling plays next year as well. That's the plan. Okay, so that obviously would limit your ability to go out and get a quality offensive coordinator. Anybody you're going to bring in that's going to be a big name is going to want to call plays. The other issue, which the fans have brought up already, and this is a very good point, everybody kind of sees this from a mile away, you know, if there's questions about Clay Helton not being retained, and he's kind of sort of dead man walking next season, what kind of quality assistants are you going to be able to bring in? That's a legitimate question, and that is a question that, you know, it's just going to linger out there until Clay Helton, if he stays around, is able to show that he's able to get a guy like a Dalen McCullough or somebody that is a quality assistant and can shut the critics up. I mean, it's basically going to be take that. Otherwise, you're going to go out and you're going to be hiring Bob Connolly or those type of player, those type of coaches. And so that's one of those things that's good. It's a big question mark going forward. Yes, there's talk that there's going to be change, but you know what is change going to be that much better? I mean, you want to make change to improve. That's the whole thing. I mean, that even goes to whether you're going to replace Clay Helton. I mean, you have to get an improvement. You have to upgrade. You don't just change for the sake of change. That's not going to do anything. You have to get better, more experienced coaches at those spots. If you're going to have one of your ace recruiters, T. Martin, off the staff, then you better sure as hell have a very good receiver coach that's going to come in. And then what are you going to do from that offensive coordinator standpoint? Because you've got Brian Ellis there too as the quarterback's coach. Now you're going to bring in two quarterback coaches now? Is Brian Ellis, maybe he could shift to being a receiver's coach? I could see that. I think Brian Ellis, and
that was his only, maybe. Yeah, he had 1 year of full-time assistant coach experience, and it was as receiver coach.
And wasn't he a receiver? Was he a receiver
in college?
No,
he was a quarterback.
Was he a quarterback? Okay. So he was a receiver's coach. So I could see them making that shift. Now, Brian Ellis, he seems like a promising young recruiter. He's not T. Martin. So there's going to be probably some missed, I think, recruits probably at that point. Now, is receiver the most need position in this 2019 class? No. It's just a position that's got quality players, and you want to grab those quality players, and certainly you want to keep those quality players away from your rivals. You don't want those guys going to Oregon. You don't want them going to Washington. You don't want them to go to Arizona State. You don't want them beating you. So that's one of those things where you want to try to get those players, and you want to keep the guys that you have. But in terms of need, to be honest, it's not the biggest need in the world. USC's got some good receivers. They really just need to develop some of those guys. Josh Emmitore-Bebe, you know, what's going on with him? He needs to get on the field at some point. There's some of those guys that are good players that you know they're on the team. They got to evolve. They got to get better, and they've got to improve. USC will be okay if they're able to do that at the receiver position. But then you're looking at, okay, who's the guy that you're bringing in as an offensive coordinator? So, yeah, we're hearing about change. To me, the biggest change is really going to be at that spot right there. You know, what's going on with T. Martin? What's his fate? And what's the fate of the play calling and the offense and how that dynamic between Clay Helton being an offensive-minded coach and bringing in somebody else with a new system, how far is Clay Helton willing to go? You know, and how far can he go? What is the potential when he's on the hot seat?
You're talking about T. Martin a lot there. David of Newport Beach had a question. In my opinion, T. Martin has been a very successful recruiter for USC, but then USC has a history of successfully recruiting wide receivers and offensive players. How much of the recent success would you credit to T, or USC being USC and T being able to close the deal?
You know, it goes back to the saying USC recruits itself, which is really only partly true. USC can recruit itself to some extent, but the product on the field recruits itself, and obviously you need good coaches for that. And the coaches do a good job. I mean, you know, there's positions where guys haven't been good recruiters, and we've seen USC suffer from a depth standpoint because of it. You look at a guy like T. Martin, and USC's had a run of NFL receivers pretty much since he got on campus. Now, there were some guys that were on the roster before he got there that he really didn't recruit. He really wasn't too involved with Marquise Lee, but you had Lane Kiffin there. And Lane Kiffin was a very, very good receiver coach at USC and a very good recruiter at USC. When Lane left, there was a little bit of a dip in USC having really good receivers. After kind of like Steve Smith and Dwayne Jarrett, there was a lull there for a number of years where USC didn't have those big playmaker type guys. And so, you know, obviously it also has to do with the talent that's available. But when you got a guy like T. Martin, you have the ability to kind of go anywhere and recruit. You know, he's good enough that even on an average year, he can maybe get a recruit to come from out of state and be able to come and play for USC. And so I give him a lot of credit, and a lot of his credit goes even outside the parameters of just the receiver position. I mean, Nyechenna Nwosu, Chris Brown, there's a few players that he's recruited outside of just the receiver position in years past that ended up being very good players. Christian Rector was another guy that he recruited, but that was back when he was more of just a receiver coach and he could focus more on recruiting. If Clay Helton could make a real power move, a real boss move, it would be somehow convincing T. Martin to remain a receiver coach, give him some type of assistant head coaching title, and then bring in a coordinator. And, you know, bring in somebody at that. And obviously, the question becomes, well, what happens to Brian Ellis? I don't know. I mean, maybe the running backs coach can be the offensive coordinator. I don't know. There's going to be some shifting that has to be done here. But I do believe T. Martin is largely responsible for the amount of talent. It's really the depth of talent is where it comes down to. And it that's where you start to see year in, year out, you always have a guy that's a go-to guy. You have Robert Woods into Marquise Lee, into Nelson Aguilar, into Juju Smith, into Tyler Vaughns. You always have a guy down the pike, and that's about depth, and that's about good recruiting. Now, you can have guys here and there that are good players, and if USC's winning football games, they'll have some good players. But in terms of having that constant depth and having that sort of just that rotation of, man, there's a guy every year that's going to be a good player, that takes good recruiters.
All right. Next up, Gerard, we got another text message. This is Rick from NorCal. He said, at this point, would it be better for a new coach and staff with a new pitch for recruits or Helton and continuity even with staff changes? I'm not sure what he means by that, but what do you think is better for recruiting right now?
That's a good question. The problem with having any kind of accuracy in answering the question is what is on the other side of that hire if you're moving away from Helton. Because, you know, we can all sit here and say the grass is green on the other side, right? We can all assume that there's this big upgrade coming and they're going to go after John Harbaugh. They're going to go after this guy, the next guy, Urban Meyer. And you could say, well, yeah, that would definitely help recruiting. That would give them a huge shot in the arm, especially if you're going after a college coach that has – sort of a built-in recruiting following in the 2019 class, and he's able to bring with him a handful of recruits. That's obviously going to supplement the class and be big. But this is USC. And again, we go back to sort of the pattern of their coaching searches and what's gone on in past years, and you don't assume that there's this huge hire in the wings. So you could sit here and say, well, yeah, if you shake it up and you bring in new coaches, you know, that it would breathe life into the program and the recruits would be pumped up, but it all depends on who you're bringing in and the fact of what staff they're being able to put together and how short amount of time are they able to put that staff together in order to make sure that some of these early signings and these early enrollees are meeting and getting to see and being able to be influenced by those new staff members, as opposed to coming out publicly stating, instead of what Lynn Swann said, being more overt and clear that Clay Helton is going to be the coach. Now, there's still going to be uncertainty there. There's still going to be questions because we just, you know, talked about T. Martin and what his future is going to be and, you know, what changes could be made, you know, are we going to see any changes in special teams? Are we going to see any changes from the defensive back position, from the defense? Does Clancy Pendergast stick around? Does he maybe look around and say, hey, you know what, I could go back to the NFL? And there's a lot of moving pieces there. So we can't answer that question with any kind of accuracy. You know, if it was a prominent head coach that was brought in and he could have – 3 or 4 staff members that would be hired almost immediately with him and then sort of fill in the staff behind him there from now until the new year, then potentially, yeah, it could make a bump for recruiting. If it was a college coach from somewhere else that already had a committed class that you're bringing in, obviously that would give a bump to recruiting. But if you're kind of not sure and you don't have a clear replacement, and you go and you get a guy that's an NFL guy and he's not really a big name and you're trying to sell it and it just, you know, there's no momentum there, then it could actually hurt the recruiting class. And USC could end up not even signing the amount of recruits that they need to sign to make sure they're at 85. And all of a sudden next season is going to be this big excuse about, well, we were only playing with, you know, 78 guys on the roster or what have you, because we came in too late and we didn't have the staff together. And then it's like, well, you better start winning games and, you know, we'll see whoever that coach is, if he's able to win games. There's just a lot of questions about that, that, you know, we just don't know at this point. It's, we love to crystal ball things, but I mean, it would be a complete guess as to how things would change depending on what coach. You have to kind of go through each scenario of each possible name. And at this point, because Clay Helton is still the coach and we're still thinking that the administration wants him to be the coach, it's hard to start to look at what would the board really look like. Obviously, we've talked about Jack Del Rio already, and we did talk about Hugh Jackson, although Hugh Jackson now is supposedly going back to the Bengals to become the offensive coordinator again for them. Granted, I don't know that that completely takes his name off of any USC head coaching hot board, because we know that coaches can have jobs. And, you know, if USC all of a sudden decided, well, we want to look at Hugh Jackson again, I don't know that he couldn't walk away from that job. I mean, you just never know. So yeah, there's a couple names that have been floated out there of guys who wanted the job. At least those are guys that we know behind the scenes have or are lobbying for the job. So we can kind of say, okay, those are potential guys. But there's other potential candidates that could arise if USC really wanted to go through the process of searching for the best candidate, a qualified candidate. And that's what you would do. That would obviously take time, but that obviously opens it up to a lot of different variables in terms of who you're actually bringing in and what a recruiting experience they have, if they have recruits that come with them, or if it's somebody that's coming in from an NFL standpoint is completely new to that process.
Kind of along those lines, B. Frost from Missouri, he wanted to know what current commits or near commits would stay or go giving a head coaching change. I just think it's really hard to say something like that. I don't know if you want to make a quick comment on it.
I hate to make this podcast about, well, we're really not sure. I think there may be guys that are pretty solid because it's USC, and it goes kind of towards the, well, you know, USC recruits itself, and it's, to some extent it does. You have location, you have the education, you have the thought that USC is in it to win it, that they're invested in the program and they want to win it. Obviously, we're a little skeptical of that and how they've done things the past few years. But there is, you know, from the recruiting community, a sense that, you know, USC is USC. And I think Ken Slovis is a guy that is committed to USC, not, you know, a ton of other schools that are really on him hard. I think that's a guy that, you know, with or without, I think is going to give USC a long look. I think even Chris Steele, I mean, we can even go to a guy that's a four-star cornerback that decommitted from USC because there's questions about what's going on with Clay Helton and you know, questions about what's going to happen with the defensive back coaching position. He wants to know what's the future of the coaching staff. But that's a guy that I could see still ending up at USC either way. I could see him still ending up at USC if Clay Helton's retained and they bring in a new defensive backs coach and he just hits it off with Chris Steele. I could see them bringing in Jack Del Rio or a new coach and them hitting off with Chris Steele and there being more stability there, knowing that there's a new coaching staff there and they're going to be there for a while. And him, you know, deciding, I like the coaching staff, I'm going to be a part of this and committing to USC. So there's always that, you know, there's even those guys that right now, Chris Steele is a decommit and he's not committed to USC. I could still see him ending up at USC either way. I think Keenan Christian is potentially a guy that's pretty solid with USC, regardless of what happens. He's a guy that USC really needs, I think, in that position. With the receiver position, Drake London is committed to the basketball team as well as the football team. So you have to think of that. The basketball team, thankfully, right now is looking good. They've been really good recruiters. They had a fantastic class going. Drake London's sort of a part of that, and I think that helps USC in that regard. I think there is, you know, maybe a handful of guys that you look at and say, you know, regardless of what goes on, I think that they really like USC and are committed to USC. I think Jude Wolf and Ethan Ray, the two tight ends that are committed, are both sort of that ilk. I think they're both of that mindset. Jude Wolf is definitely being recruited a lot by other schools. I think with Ethan Ray, that's a guy that's, you know, now got his second ACL injury. I think USC is, you know, his best option for sure. I don't think that he would really waver a whole lot, even with the new coaching staff. Kind of reminds me of Manure McLean coming. He's also a guy that, you know, really wasn't in contact with a lot of other schools. And so, you know, in terms of options, people criticize USC for kind of having a mediocre recruiting class. But at this point, that mediocre recruiting class is kind of a positive in that there's not a lot of competition for those players. So if a new coaching staff was to come in, I think if it's a coaching staff that's competent in recruiting and you've got some good recruiters on the staff, I think they'd be okay being able to lock up what they have right now. It's really a matter of, can you close with the top players that are still on the board that are uncommitted and you don't have relationships with? You know, how quickly can you build those relationships and how much work can you get done in the next 2 months?
That kind of goes into Lloyd's question. It said, it looks like Clay Helton is recruiting a lot of three stars. And I know you can find diamonds in the rough, but it looks like they're going overboard. If you look at the top teams, the ones that make it to the playoff normally go for the higher ranked recruits. I never thought much of Clay Helton as a head coach, and I still feel the same, but recruiting was kind of okay. But now that starts to suck, from Lloyd.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're in that point in the year where now the season starts to impact, you know, how you're going to recruit. And in past years, USC has been able to close strong and it's built momentum on the recruiting trail. And you don't have any of that momentum now. So, you know, the sort of, we're going to wait until the end of the year to recruit, it now really hurts you. And so they've got to pivot and they've got to scramble and they've got to try to go after some guys that are three stars and some guys that maybe are not USC caliber at the beginning of the year. That's just how it is. It's just kind of a natural progression of things. Can they get some guys that end up being really good players from that group? Yeah, you can. You know, I mean, Chinonu Wusu and Christian Rector and some of those guys that when Ed Orgeron was interim coach and then before they brought in Sark, they brought in a good group of guys that they got committed when Ed Orgeron was interim coach. And it was interesting because we kind of questioned that. How is the administration allowing Ed Orgeron to go out there and offer all these guys? Because if you remember way back then, it was an influx of scholarship offers, and most of the scholarship offers were going to local players, Jenny Harris. Those guys, those were the guys getting offered, and they were the type of guys that you look at and you go, okay, Chris Brown, Christian Rector, Jenny Harris, these are guys that might commit right away. So now you're taking commitments with an interim coach. That's kind of weird because you're putting the new coach that comes in an awkward situation. And that new coach that came in ended up being Steve Sarkisian. And luckily, Steve Sarkisian was a West Coast guy and was recruiting a lot of those guys at Washington at the point. But that's not always going to be the case. And so, you know, what happens in between this point and a new head coach coming in is obviously it impacts that new coaching staff. And so it's just going to kind of be interesting to see how that all falls out. And again, we don't know exactly how a new coaching staff would come in because we don't know who that new coach is going to be. But with this staff right now, I think the stretch is going to be supplementing some of those missed out opportunities. Like I said, offensive line, I think enough offers are going out now. You see that it's kind of going into plan B. I think with the defensive back position, you're still not quite there at plan B yet. I still don't think they're necessarily scrambling. They still have a shot at kind of their plan A to some extent. I mean, we talked about that a little bit in the war room. I mean, you still are in it for Trent McDuffie, cornerback out of St. John Bosco. He is a guy that was definitely a plan A for USC. They're still in it for Chris Steele. That, I think, is still, you know, up in the air a little more. Chris Steele is going to be an early enrollee. He's going to probably sign early, although talking to his dad, he's not going to sign the first day of the early signing period. In fact, he may wait and not sign at all and just enroll that's one of those potential type things to see what's going to happen at USC before he actually makes a decision. The big issue with the defensive back position, on top of USC just not really recruiting it that hard for much of the year, is that it's not a great year for defensive backs in general, certainly for safeties. And we've talked about this before. It's really a down year for safeties. And so, I mean, USC's really kind of, I mean, their plan A for a long time has really been Cameron Williams, who was committed to Oregon and then decommitted. They committed to Washington. He's still been a guy that's been on campus. He was also at the Cal game. So he's a guy that's been around, and they really seem to like him. He was kind of a plan A guy at the safety position. Noah Pollock-Gates has become a plan A guy at the safety position, although they're kind of recruiting him more as a corner, and he's a guy that can play corner. He's very similar to Chris Steele in that regard. So, you know, you got McDuffie, you've got Pollock-Gates, you've got Cam Williams there, you've already got Max Williams committed, Trey Davis. And those are guys that USC took before there was really big questions about, you know, whether Clay Helton was going to be the coach or not. They could still kind of put together their plan A, at least what this coaching staff's plan A was. The question is, if a new coaching staff comes in, I would wonder if some of these guys would be on that plan A. You know, if you know, you take Max Williams, 5'8", 170 pounds with the ACL injury, pretty small guy. There'd be big questions about, you know, whether he fits into the plans of the new coaching staff. Trey Davis, who's, I think, ranked 110, 115 or something like that in the national rankings at the cornerback position, is a three-star from Federal Way, Washington. It's kind of going out of your way after a guy from Federal Way, Washington, who's only a three-star. Marist Laafu, who's a 6'2", 200-pound cornerback that they just offered from Honolulu, Hawaii. There's a lot of guys like Isaiah Rutherford, we always talked about, who's now committed to Notre Dame. USC just kind of didn't recruit him. You know, Jeremiah Crudell, USC kind of didn't recruit him. Chris Amadora, a guy that USC just kind of didn't recruit, committed to Texas as a safety, number 17 in the nation. I mean, there's guys like that. If a new coaching staff was to come in, they may have a completely different opinion about, you know, who they want to recruit and who they want to go after. Then it becomes, do you have enough time to be able to flip some of those guys? Because, again, it's not a great year for defensive backs. And, unfortunately, it wouldn't really impact USC that much if they didn't have five guys off the roster no longer on the roster. If you didn't lose Jack Jones, if you didn't lose Joel Cook, if you didn't lose Bubba Bolden, if you didn't lose Akili Ross, This is a big issue. This is a problem. This is an indictment there on the current coaching staff when you have that many guys from one position no longer on the staff, or excuse me, no longer on the roster. So that's a problem. That's something that kind of USC sort of dug themselves a hole in a year where, you know, that's not a great cycle of players. When we looked at fall camp, it was like, you know, that's a pretty deep group of guys. And now you're going, wow, they need to sign like five guys now at that position to be able to sort of break even. And this is not the year we want to do it.
Okay, you mentioned a bunch of positions there. Let's go offensive line first. David had a question. Could you please ask GM how likely it is that we get Sean Ryan? Is he our biggest must-get on the offensive line?
Yeah, he's a must-get. I mean, if Jonah Tana'au is kind of solid with Oregon and USC can't continue to maneuver something there, and we'll see. I mean, obviously, Drevno takes over, but the product on the field is the product on the field, and it's tough for Drevno to be able, I think, to sell it away from what Oregon's done. Oregon's not been great either. You know, it's not fantastic, but it's one of those things where I think they've just built a great relationship with them. And their entire staff has really kind of gotten to his head, and he feels like that's the place for him. And, you know, obviously from an offensive line standpoint, they have done a good job developing some offensive linemen. Penei Sewell, who just signed there last year, who Oregon was able to get away from USC, was really the one recruit that Oregon was able to get away from USC in the 2018 recruiting class. Ends up being kind of a freshman All-American, and a lot of those guys are rating high, and it's, you know, Mario Cristobal, who's an offensive line coach, who's their head coach. And so they've really made that sort of an emphasis for them. So, you know, Jonah Tana'u hasn't been around a lot at USC. We thought he'd be around more. He wasn't around when Neil Callaway was the coach, and that just makes you kind of wonder. He don't think he had the greatest relationship with Neil Callaway. Now that Drevno is there, he's back on campus and, you know, was at the game. I just don't know if Drevno's going to be able to do a whole lot there. I think that's a tough get for USC at this point to kind of build some more traction with him. They need to get Inoke Vamahi on campus and kind of get him in the fold and see if they can kind of do something with him late. They're really battling against Washington and they're battling against Utah for him. So Sean Ryan, yeah, I mean, locally, I think he is definitely high up there. I certainly from a ranking standpoint, there's nobody that's really on par with him at number three. The odd thing about it is that he actually had a really great relationship with Neil Calloway. That's kind of the spin on this, the twist in the plot is that was the one kid that did, you know, the highest rated guy was a guy that Neil Calloway was recruiting and had built a pretty good relationship with him. I do think, though, that Drevno is smart. Drevno is a pretty good recruiter. Drevno is actually a very good talent evaluator. I think more than anything, he's a very detail-oriented guy, and he's a guy with a plan. I mean, when he was first at USC, when I interviewed him and talked to him, he really stood out as a guy with a plan and kind of a specific way of doing things. He didn't BS you with a lot of coaching jargon. He didn't BS you with a lot of vague sort of generalizations about football that you could kind of throw at any position and any scenario. And you get that a lot. You know, you got that a lot from Neil Calloway. And you got that a lot from Bob Connolly. Well, you ask him specific questions, you get very general answers, and you kind of start to think to yourself, what's the plan here with this guy? What does he have a specific plan for the offensive line? Does he know what he's looking for in the recruiting trails? Or something there? Or is he kind of sitting back and allowing other people to kind of recruit that position for him? And I think that's been one criticism of this staff, is that because you have some part-time recruiters on the staff, you have guys sitting back and allowing people outside that position to have to go out there and recruit that position. And when you do that, you're not getting maybe the best evaluations done. You're not getting, you know, this is what I want to coach. This is what fits what we're doing specifically. And when it's hands-on and it's that position coach recruiting that position, that's what you're going to get. And Drevno is a very specific guy. He has very specific wants at the offensive line. He has very specific ideas of what his offensive line should look like, and really probably what the offense should look like with that offensive line. So from that standpoint, I think while you're seeing USC scramble a bit, I think it's not the worst thing in the world, because Drevno is the guy that's going to be at the offensive line. At least he's the offensive line coach right now, and I think he has a plan and has an understanding of what really works for him and what doesn't. I don't think there's a lot of vague generalizations into, hey, let's just go get some guys that are some bodies right now. I think he wants specifics.
All right, we got a bunch of defensive back questions, so we'll go through them. We don't want to go too in-depth on each one, but here's the first voicemail for you.
Hey guys, Chris from San Jose. I'll try to keep it quick. On a scale of hot being positive, cold being negative, the chances of USC flipping Elijah Blades, considering the poor development of our cornerbacks right now, and any graduating seniors. Thanks.
Hot to cold. You know, I think it was warm there for a while. I think it was warm at the beginning of the season. Now it's more lukewarm cool. And certainly if, you know, we're hearing there's going to be changes made potentially at the defensive back position, that's going to impact things a lot. You know, who is USC going to bring in? We talked about this last year. They probably missed, and there's a lot. You can look at this at a few different positions at the coaching staff. Clay Helm was just a year late on a lot of these moves. You know, I mean, a lot of them, we expected there to be a potential move at the offensive line, didn't happen. We've looked at the defensive back position and thought there might be some moves, didn't happen. Special teams, we've talked about that many times. USC's put a lot of resources and a lot of time to special teams, and they are very inconsistent on special teams. No moves have been made there. We thought with the 10th full-time position would bring in Dante Williams, who was a defensive back coach at Nebraska, ace recruiter, a T. Martin-type recruiter at defensive back. USC balked. They waited and waited. Oregon was aggressive. They got him. They brought him in actually as an outside linebackers coach. They maneuvered, shifted some guys around. He's now the cornerbacks coach. He's responsible for a lot of those guys that US that Oregon has recruited at defensive back, including Elijah Blades. So, you know, you snooze, you lose. And that's a guy that, you know, I mean, USC, maybe they can make a move now and decide, hey, yeah, we're going to bring in Dante Williams as defensive back coach. I don't know if that's really applicable now, but they could have done it or could do it, and it would definitely obviously make a big impact on the defensive back position with this recruiting class. That's one of those things where you can go and hire a coach, and all of a sudden it flips a switch, and you know, he could bring guys with him to USC. So we really don't know what's going to happen. Right now, as it stands right now, I would say it's cool. It's pretty good. It's not cold. It's cool. You know, it's not, it's, you know, got to wear a jacket. Not a heavy jacket, but just wear a jacket, because I don't think Elijah Blades is real high right now with USC. But the thing that maintains, and this is why his interest in USC started to get a lot higher at the beginning of the season, is the transfers and all the guys that they've lost. And with the JUCO, the biggest thing is playing time. That is the number one thing with the JUCO recruit. He wants to get on the field ASAP. Only has limited amount of eligibility. Got to get on the field quickly. And USC has that, especially with Biggie Marshall leaving. You know, Isaiah Langley, the senior, and they've lost guys behind them. So there's still potential there. I mean, he's definitely not one of those things that I would say he's off the board. He, you know, I just remember right now, I forgot, I keep forgetting to put him on our target list. I just updated the target list, and I think I forgot to put him on there again. He's a guy that, you know, that you could bring in somebody and it could change the dynamic completely. But if there are no changes made, yeah, then I wouldn't bet on him going to USC. I think he'd still go to Oregon.
All right, we got another voicemail question about DBs. Here you go.
Hi, this is John from Miramar Beach, Florida. Give me an idea of what's going on with the safeties and the early entrants. Who are we looking at? Are there any safeties in that mix? Fight on. Thanks for all you do.
Yeah, the kind of continuing with the defensive back theme here, talking about those guys. I mean, I think USC's scrambling a bit. You know, with the safety position specifically, that's just a position where they have not had, they don't have a ton of guys to be able to choose from. This is a bad year. And so Nopola Gates is a guy that, again, he wants to play corner, but potential could play safety. Chris Steele is a guy that could potentially play safety. I just don't know where they go. I mean, they just offered, like I said, Marist Laiafu, who is from Honolulu, Hawaii, who's 6'2", 200 pounds, a bigger corner. He just, you know, officially visited Notre Dame. And that's a guy that we kind of put in a crystal ball for, but, you know, he just officially Notre Dame, going to Punahou, which is a private high school there in Honolulu. I don't know if it's a sure bet for USC with even a guy like that. And that's, again, a bigger corner that could potentially play safety. So really there's no safeties in this class that USC had a shot at that were sort of the prototypical Clancy Pendergast safeties, the 6'3", 205-pound safeties. That's the guy Clancy Pendergast has been looking for. And there's really nobody in this class. So they've had to kind of sort of pivot and go after guys that were, okay. And at the beginning of the year, the beginning of the recruiting process for the 2019 class, they didn't need to. You know, they had Bubba Bolden there. They had Akilah Ross. You had Jamel Cook. But now you don't have those guys, and you're scrambling to try to find some guys that kind of fit that profile. And there's really not a lot of those guys in this class, not guys that USC has a shot at. So, again, you know, it's Cameron Williams, if you could somehow try to get him away from Washington, which seems tough to do, and some smaller guys that are just really not to the body type that we've seen USC recruit in past classes. So it's kind of a bleak look at the defensive back position, and even if you brought in a new coaching staff, it's not going to make the class that much better. You know, the only thing that can make it better is if you're bringing in coaches that have access to recruits that are sort of outside the region and outside what USC's recruiting board looks like right now. I mean, nationally, it's not a great class, but if you, you know, if you brought in somebody from the Southeast and maybe it's a really good, you know, position recruiter that, that has some guys that might want to follow him to USC, then all of a sudden you might interject, you know, some guys that, that would be playmaker type guys that, that would be able to make an impact. But otherwise, yeah, I think the safety position is just not going to be that great, regardless of what you do at USC.
And then another DB question, Corey, kind of asked what was already asked, but also, do you think USC will take 5 or 6 DBs in this class?
Yeah, I think they have to. I think that they're at this point where they kind of have to get try to get 5 guys. I just think it's going to be, you know, you hope you get a couple guys that are guys that can contribute pretty early on in their careers, and then you might have 3 guys that are just guys that are there, that are contributors. They're okay. And listen, we always talk about, you know, the whole brick and mortar philosophy, and it stands at the defensive back position. And they've got some talent at the defensive back position. I mean, if they're able to develop Isaac Taylor Stewart, I mean, that's a guy that was this big time recruit last year, really athletic, a guy that's 6'2", 200 pounds, can run like the wind. You know, if you have those guys on the roster already, then you've got guys that it could potentially, you know, make this class a wash. You don't necessarily need some big time guys to follow up right after them. You know, Elijah Griffin is already starting and playing. Chase Williams is there as a quality defensive back. You know, we know Talanoa Hufanga is going to be a future great Trojan. You've got some good players there. You've got some quality. It's just a matter of building in some quantity and building in some guys behind there that can play and give you quality reps. And so it's not the end of the world that they won't have a great defensive back class. Like I said, I find it hard to see a way that they're going to have a great defensive back class. I think just locally is not a good class, and they've passed on some of the quality guys that were there from a star standpoint. So you're going to be filling the class probably with 3 guys that are okay contributors and hoping to get a couple guys that are better, that are maybe all conference type guys. Maybe one of those guys can end up being an All-American and showing out and being a really good player down the line. That's sort of, I think, what you're shooting for. If you're going worst case scenario, you're getting probably 4 guys in the class that are just guys that are filling guys that you're not getting big contributions from, that, you know, maybe some of those guys even wash out of the program down the line. That would be kind of the worst case scenario.
We had a couple questions from Ted Manhattan Beach. He loves the recruiting podcast. Thanks us for doing a great job in the recruiting world. First, what are the chances with Siaki Ika?
Not great. I mean, Alabama is continuing to make him a priority recruit. Oregon, it made some moves with him. There's some angles that USC has to recruit him, but they use that official visit for him real early in the year. Still odd. It's still not sure why they would do that with a guy from Utah. You'd figure he'd be a kid that you'd want to bring in, you know, more this time of year. But again, you know, maybe that's a coaching staff looking ahead and looking to see the kind of season they would have. You know, how many guys do you want to bring in for a Cal game that you might lose? It's an interesting thing when you kind of look at how things have played out and then how things were planned out. USC never brings in a lot of recruits during the season. That's just what they've done even since Pete Carroll. They want to focus on game week, and I understand that. I think that there's some value to that strategy. But there's also something to be said for, you know, not bringing in kids during certain weeks when you feel like there's going to be good atmosphere if you are anticipating a good season. And so I think there was maybe some hesitation with that, and that's why you bring in a guy like Siaki Ika early in the year, because otherwise it just doesn't make a lot of sense. Otherwise, you know, you've got a guy that's an early enrollee. You want to bring him in December right before he's going to make that decision. You want a last word with him. And at this point, I don't know if USC is going to get a last word with him. It's a bit of an uphill battle. Like I said, they have some inherent advantages in recruiting him. They have some angles they can use. But I wouldn't be changing a crystal ball for USC right now.
All right. And we also have a question from Ted. Any kids you think we might flip near the end? He says, Mace Funa. Oh, please say Mace Funa. That's from Ted.
I don't think so. Not of the quality players that people would get excited about. It's hard to project though. Again, there's so many things that can go on. And people love to run with what I say and go, Gerard said there's not going to be any guys. And then we got guys. It depends on what happens. You know, it depends on, Oregon's really going all out for Kevon Thibodeau, and Thibodeau and Mace Funa kind of play the same position. So maybe Mace Funa looks at that and says, I want to go somewhere where I'm the guy. He likes USC and I think he likes Johnny Nansen, but USC just didn't work out with him and USC, but he's still been around USC. I think he's still open. He's actually kind of looking at Ohio State, I hear too. So I don't know that he's necessarily 100% solid with Oregon. But it's one of those things that just USC has no momentum for any of those guys right now. It's hard to see USC being able to flip a bunch of quality guys when, you're selling a lot of instability and you're selling a really bad record, and all you have is excuses. All you have is, JT Daniels was a freshman and we had a lot of injuries, and it's like, yeah, okay. But how does that encourage a kid to go there over another school? As I said, Oregon, not necessarily great. Oregon's going to probably be pretty bad next year, you would think, with their quarterback graduating and him being he's a kind of a big deal there. He could end up being one of the top quarterbacks, if not the top quarterback picked in the next NFL draft. So you're losing a lot with him. And Oregon's kind of trying to run this smash mouth type of offense that I don't know if that works up there. I don't know if even being a good recruiting staff, I think it's tough to have enough top quality players to run that kind of offense always know that you're going to have a really good quarterback in that type of offense. It's really, one of those things with, running the pro style offense, very few schools can run a pro style offense because very few schools have access to top rated pocket packs or passing quarterbacks. That's just the way it goes. You have to have really good quarterbacks and good offensive lines and really just good players overall to run a pro style offense, because each facet of the offense depends on the other. The quarterback position depends on having a good offensive line, because you're not necessarily going to have a real scrambling type quarterback. Your quarterback has to be very good. Your receivers have to be very good. Now, receivers probably in that offense, you can get away with less talented guys as long as they're really good route runners and they're smart type of receivers and they're good blockers downfield. I think that's probably the one position you can skimp out on in terms of quality more than others. But you got to have really good running backs also, because you're going to be running the ball most of all. So it's not like the spread offense where it's a little more gimmicky, but you don't necessarily have to depend so much on each position helping out the other so much. The quarterback is a scrambler. He's going to run. So the offensive line could kind of be, it could be okay, but it doesn't have to be great. You're kind of using space and misdirection to keep the defense on its heels. And so a lot of it really is more about, what can you get at the running back position? What can you get at the quarterback position? And everywhere else is sort of like, we may have some holes here and there, but we can make up for it. That's why, that's why Mike Leach has been able to be successful at Washington State. They're not going to be able to recruit on par with Ohio State, Alabama, USC, Miami, those type of schools, which inherently have recruiting advantages. So when Oregon is going to sort of this more like we're going to be this smash mouth team, I don't know. I don't know if that really works up there, because you're going to have really good offensive linemen and quarterbacks and running backs, and you're going to have a stream of those guys constantly there. And it's tough because they just don't have those inherent recruiting advantages. Nike or no Nike, they still are in Eugene, Oregon, and it's tough to be able to constantly get guys to be able to come up there and commit. And right now they're able to get some guys, but USC and UCLA are dreadful. When UCLA or USC is good, they're going to take a majority of your recruits away from you. So that's why Chip Kelly worked up there, because he had more of an offense that was based on the scheme itself being good rather than just the talent. It wasn't a scheme based on talent so much. Pro-style offenses tend to be based more on talent. That's why they're pro-style offenses. They work in the NFL because everybody's talented. Well, the same thing goes to college. It can work at USC. It can work at certain schools because those schools are able to get those type of players more consistently.
We got one last one. Nick from Cyprus, Big Nick 21, USC from the P. He wants a no holds barred answer from you, Gerard. What's the reason Kayvon Thibodeau doesn't want to go to USC, and why don't they want him to? No PC stuff here. Fight on from Nick.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. Just it's one of those things. Well, don't be PC. Okay, I won't be. it doesn't work like that. Can't just demand it. Yeah, USC's just don't want to get caught up in a jackpot. I think there's some feeling there that, you know, there's stuff going on with recruitment that they're just not into. Kind of heard the same thing now about Alabama, that there's more hesitation there than there was, and not so much with Oregon. They're going to recruit them full blast, and they want to make that statement by getting the number one recruit in the nation. They feel he's number one. 24/7 has him ranked number one. That's not necessarily the same opinion I think that USC has. I think they feel like he's a good player, but not necessarily like the number one guy and a must get. They certainly haven't recruited him like that since early in the spring. And so, yeah, this combination of things that, you know, I just think that his recruitment is a little bit crazy, and they have they've not been on board with it. And maybe if, you know, they felt like he was a generational type talent, it might be a different story, but I think you can combine where they feel like they're not really sure how he fits the system. They're not sure if he's really as talented as we have him rated. I don't know if he's as talented as we have him rated, quite frankly. I've made that comment before. I was one of the first guys to ever write about him, first guys to ever see him play in person, and I thought he had a lot of potential. I think he's one of the better players in the class, but at that particular position, you're looking for freaks. You're looking for guys that are 6'6", you know, 260 and run 4.5. And he's not that guy. He's a good player, but he's not that physical freak. And so I can kind of see where they're coming from. I don't know, you know, everything. The reason why we're not going to get all non-PC and just get no holes bars is because there's a lot of allegations. There's a lot of rumors. There's a lot of talk. And that stuff is unsubstantiated. And so I'm not going to sit here and repeat it. But I can tell you that's part of the reason why I think USC has been hesitant. I know it's part of the reason they've been hesitant in recruiting them. And now I'm starting to hear that same thing about from Alabama, from very good sources. And people that, you know, told me early on after his visit there that, you know, mom wanted him to go to Alabama, and he loved Alabama, she loved Alabama. He was not as in love with Alabama, but they felt like they could close the deal with him eventually. And so now I'm hearing from the same sources, you know, Alabama can go get other guys. They don't have to play the game that he's playing. And so they're going to choose to do that is the latest that I heard. So yeah, that's about as no hold bars as I'm going to get right now with that.
All right, that's going to wrap it up. I got to jump on, do a radio interview here real quick. So thanks to Gerard Martinez. Follow him on Twitter at GMART Live. Thanks to all of you out there for listening and being subscribers to us here on the Peristyle, USCfootball.com. We appreciate it. Just real quick, too, wanted to mention we put up a story about Levi Jones. So we found his arrest records. There was a misdemeanor arrest over the summer. We also found out he is no longer on the team. So we're going to get some confirmation from Clay Helton after practice a little bit later today. But just want to leave you guys with that. So thanks so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.